From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of October 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Bakes. She's at Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will join us, actually a bit earlier than usual because I talked to him longer than normal today, about 5 minutes rather than four. We discussed the really rocky weather in the Midwest, the rainfall in Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, parts of northern Illinois and Wisconsin too, and then we took a look at South America where they're off to a really stunning start. We'll hear from him, and then along the way we'll check in on what conditions are really like on the ground with the state statisticians from Illinois, Minnesota, and Iowa, and hear again from Scott Irwin too about the EVE-15 announcement made by the Trump administration, how that works into the SRE, relatively speaking, that's the small refinery exemption, and what it means to biodiesel or soy diesel. You'll want to stay with us because that'll wrap up our half hour here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Jackie Vakes is now here from Stuart Peterson. Jackie, let's get straight into this. What do you see for the support and resistance levels this week?
Well, you know, they're a bit better than they were last week because we've had a fairly decent move, although, you know, today certainly couldn't bear that out. But when you look at the December corn, and this will probably be the, you know, as we move forward, we'll see once what tomorrow's report brings, but 360 first support, 342 and a half second, and then 325. So not a whole lot of change there. 372 resistance, 388 and a half second resistance, and then 395. I left 395 rather than going back up to that $4 level, primarily because of where we're at in harvest. And I think it's going to be really tough. So I think that's going to be a major resistance level. March 371 support, 355 for second support, 338 for main support, 382, 398, and then the 418 and a half to the 419 and a quarter gap that we have being major resistance out there in March. Now, you look at Novi beans, you know, we're coming to the end of the Novi contract, so its ability to do a lot is, it can move a lot, there's no question about that, but not quite as much as it used to be. So 850 support, 812 next, and 776. 870 resistance, 884, and then 906. And January, 862 for support, 850, and then 786. And when you look at resistance, we look at 895, 933, and then 961. And so I just think where we are and with everything that's going on with the trade tariffs, those are going to be very strong spots. And this is weekly again.
How do you view the managed money this week?
Very interesting on managed money. We now have managed money long only one contract, and that is soy meal. And that they dropped from 28,000 long to 24,000 long this past week. I'm sure that has, you know, the impact of the report is what's going on. When you look at short, they increased their soft red wheat from 4,000 short to 16,000 this week. The corn on the opposite side went from 94,000 short last week to only 65,000 short this week. Beans stayed exactly the same at 50,000 short. And soy oil went from 86,000 short last week to 51,000 short. So you can see that there's definitely some spread action going on, and, you know, just positioning, I guess, is probably the best word to use, Todd. It's positioning ahead of the report.
Have you been following the export inspections?
Well, I think, you know, when you looked at the inspections, of course, we know we've had some pretty wimpy bean inspections. But I thought what would be interesting is for people to know where we are as far as the year goes. And so on wheat, we're behind 29% compared to last year. But the USDA is saying that they believe there will be a 14% increase year over year. Corn is 62% ahead of last year. And the USDA is saying down 1% year over year. And I think this helps back up the argument that we talked about last week as to whether or not we're front-loading corn. Beans, 35% behind last year. And that USDA is actually predicting only a 3% decrease year over year. So they have you know, they certainly are leaning toward the possibility of us picking up some additional business.
What are the expectations for tomorrow's USDA report?
Well, when you look at the USDA report, it's kind of interesting. Corn stocks right now are estimated to be at $1.9 billion compared to $1.7 billion last year on the September report. Compared to last month on the September report, corn 860 compared to 845. I think that might be a little tight. The high number is 975. So we'll see once if we live up to that or not. Wheat, 1,027,000,000 compared to 935. None of these are big surprises, you know, because we had the grain stocks report. On the world side of things, corn 195 million metric tons compared to 194.2. Beans 95.4 compared to 94.7, and wheat basically 274.5. So the trend at the world level is for everything to be higher too, and that makes sense because we had higher stocks here in the United States. Now we're also going to be looking at production, you know, and corn production, the estimate is to come in at 14.85 billion. That'd be about 30 million higher than we were back in September. And 250 billion or million approximately bigger than last year on this same report. Now, when you look at the corn yield, 181.8 is the average guess. We were at 181.3 last month. Last year, 176.6. And soybean production, 4.7 versus 4.693, about 40 million higher. Not a big surprise. Again, grain stocks. And when you get the yield situation, 53.4 compared to 52.8. And I think that's going to be there's going to be a question about that, Todd, primarily just because of the weather that we've been having, you know, and the delays that we're seeing in some of the bean harvest that's going on.
Normally, Jackie, you put together some stats to give us historical context as it relates to the USDA reports. Do you have those for this week?
Yeah, I do. We do this research every single month, you know, and make comparisons. And this one's kind of interesting, I think. The day of, corn is either down 8 or up 14, beans down 21 or up 23. And over the last 15 years, when you look at, well, it's actually 17 years, but there's only 15 where there were big moves, corn is in the middle of the pack as far as being positive versus negative. Beans, however, this report comes in as the least likely to be negative. Now, I think that is extremely interesting. 2 weeks after the report, corn has either been down 13 or up 18, and beans down 23 or up 38, you know, so you can see. But I think that the big thing that I was, you know, interested in was that the beans were the least likely to be negative on this report. And I think it's a possibility. We've already put a lot into here, unless for some reason they really come in with a high carryout number.
Yesterday, the Trump administration, and then last night, Mr. Trump himself made an announcement about E15 and its use year-round in the United States. Will this make much of a difference, and is it a good thing?
Oh, I think it was really a good thing for us as corn farmers. You know, I mean, they lifted that ban, and now we're able to sell E15 year-round rather than just in the summer. So, you know, I know the oil refiners are really ticked off about it, but I think for us as producers, it's a great situation, and it's just going to mean more corn demand domestically, and that's what we really need.
Let's switch topics. How are things going in South America?
Well, you know, they've had very favorable weather when it comes to planting down there, you know, and so in both Brazil and Argentina, they continue to do that. I looked at something. It's likely, Dr. Cordonier was saying that it's really likely that the farmer down there is probably going to hold to the $10 level before they become aggressive sellers. Now, you know, everybody hears that and they think, oh, we got to go to $10. But this depends entirely on the exchange rate. At the current exchange rate, futures, you know, in order to get them to $10, either have to go to $10 or the exchange rate needs to climb from 3.75 real per dollar to 4.35. And so that would mean either the U.S. dollar gets much, much stronger, the real gets weaker, you know, or the futures climb. So you've got, there's alternatives there. So I'm hopeful that maybe we'll get some bump in the futures along with everything else that's going on.
Hey, thanks so much, Jackie. Anything else before I let you go?
Well, I was just going to say, CONAB is going to release their first forecast in South America. I'm sorry I stopped when I did, for 18-19 tomorrow. And The Brazil election is going to go to a runoff on the 20th of October. In order for a candidate to win, they have to garner 50% of the vote in the first election. And Bolsonaro, if people remember, he's the candidate who was stabbed while he was campaigning, and he hasn't been on the trail for over a month now. He got 46% of the vote. And he's promoting a crackdown on crime and corruption, and agriculture supports him to the max because they're very tired of what's been going on down there. Interesting fact, voting is required in Brazil for anybody who is over 17 years old and below 70. And if you don't vote, you got to fill out a form explaining why, or you get a big fat fine. Very different from here.
And I kind of think we're glad of that. Hey, thanks so much, Jackie.
Yeah, thank you for taking care of me. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
And that is Jackie Vakes. She is with Stuart Peterson. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows, as of Sunday, 93% of the corn crop around the nation had matured, and 34% of the crop had been harvested. The rolling five-year average, interestingly, for corn is 26%. Soybeans around the nation are 91%, dropping leaves 85% is the rolling five-year average. 32% of the crop has been harvested, and it normally is at 36%. Now here's an update from the state statisticians.
This is Ben Torrance, agricultural statistician for the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Region Field Office. Continued wet weather conditions allowed Iowa farmers just 1.6 days suitable for field work last week. Activities for the week included harvesting corn and soybeans when weather permitted, topsoil moisture levels rated 0% very short, 0% short, 41% adequate, and 59% surplus. 95% of the corn crop was mature, 9 days ahead of average. 15% of the state's corn for grain crop has been harvested, 10 days ahead of last year. Farmers in southeast Iowa continue to lead the way with 39% of their corn for grain harvested. Moisture content of field corn being harvested was at 20%. Nearly all of the soybean crop was coloring, with 94% in dropping leaves, 8 days ahead of average. 18% of the soybean crop has been harvested, 5 days behind the average. Soybean condition rated 70% good to excellent. Muddy feedlot conditions have been a challenge for cattle producers. For the USDA NAS Upper Midwest Region Field Office, this is Ben Torrance.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Rainfall totals ranged from just 0.1 inch in southeastern Illinois to more than 3 inches in northwestern Illinois. Overall, the state averaged 1.55 inches of rain, more than 0.75 inch above normal for this week. There was an average of 4.7 days suitable for field work around the state last week. The Illinois soybean crop is now 51% harvested, compared to 49% 1 year ago and 39% for the five-year average. The condition of the crop was rated 6% very poor to poor, 14% fair, and 80% good to excellent. Corn harvest reached 63% finished, compared to 36% last year and 41% normally. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, reminding everyone to be on the lookout for harvest equipment as you drive in rural areas.
This is Dan Loftus, state statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, with the weekly crop progress and condition report for the week ending October 7, 2018. Cool temperatures, clouds, and rainfall were common throughout much of the state during the week. There were only 2.9 days suitable for field work. Field activities included harvesting corn, soybeans, dryable beans, potatoes, sunflower, and sugar beets. There were several reports of wet weather hindering harvest activity. Topsoil moisture supplies rated 0% very short, 2% short, 61% adequate, and 37% surplus. Corn mature was at 96%, that's 13 days ahead of the five-year average. Harvest of corn for grain at 15% complete was over 2 weeks ahead of last year and 5 days ahead of average. Corn for silage harvest was 96% complete, that's 10 days ahead of average. Corn crop condition was rated 77% good to excellent. 98% of the soybean crop was dropping leaves, almost 2 weeks ahead of average. 37% of the soybean crop was harvested, and that's 6 days ahead of last year, but 3 days behind average. Soybean condition was rated 72% good to excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress across the nation. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thanks for being with us. It's become a soggy fall, especially for farmers in a large part of the western and maybe even in Illinois, some of the states to the north as well. Can you tell me who can move at this point and how long they might be stymied?
Well, it certainly does not look like there's a lot of area that there's going to see a lot of movement. Certainly, Kansas, a big part of Missouri, Iowa, portions of northwestern Illinois and Wisconsin, maybe southeastern Minnesota, all that area is probably on hold now for a while. The rains that have occurred over the last couple of weeks have certainly been very impressive across that region, running more than six times normal across a large part of that region, and the only part of the northwestern Corn Belt that really isn't included in that is maybe a small part of west central Minnesota, eastern South Dakota down into northeastern Nebraska. There's a few counties in northwestern Iowa that aren't quite as wet as the rest of that area I described. So there's a little bit of potential field work there in the not-so-distant future in those northwestern parts of the Corn Belt. But that area from Kansas into Wisconsin, really, they're not going to have a chance to do much for at least a week. And I say that because the temperatures are going to be quite a bit cooler. Even though we're shutting down the rain machine, we're just not going to see a lot of really warm, sunny days for a while here. So it's going to be kind of a slow improvement. And maybe a little bit later in the month, we'll start to warm back up again and have an opportunity for a faster drying. But I really think these shots of cool air are going to come and go as we go forward through the next 10 days or so. So not a pretty picture for those particular areas.
Are you more concerned about the western areas and Iowa, Nebraska, maybe South Dakota, Kansas, or those areas in Minnesota, North Dakota, Wisconsin, with the cool air and I suppose maybe potential for more snowfall?
Well, I think that the general precipitation pattern is going to give us a little bit of a break. There's certainly a storm right now in the upper parts of the Midwest, and they are going to see snow the rest of the day today in the eastern parts of the Dakotas and western and northern Minnesota. Once this storm's out of the way, what we've got coming up over the next 10 days is going to be a little bit more restricted. Very quick-moving, weak frontal systems that will produce a little bit of moisture, but not a lot. And I think that the bottom line is that we won't have a lot more new moisture to have to deal with, even in the form of snow. I think that we'll have a little bit of it, but it's not going to be hugely problematic, I think. As we go later into the month, we should get away from the precipitation long enough and get warmth and long enough to improve the scenario for a little while. The lower and eastern parts of the Midwest, of course, in much better shape. They haven't been nearly as wet. They've had a lot warmer weather. The moisture that's occurring there right now is certainly temporary as far as putting them out of the field. So it's certainly a different story on the other side of the fence here.
Before I let you go, tell me a bit about South America and how they're progressing with the planting season.
You know, Brazil's having an excellent start to their rainy season, absolutely wonderful. The center west and center south crop areas seeing a good mix of rain and sunshine, sufficient amounts of moisture for germination, emergence, and establishment. It is going to get a little bit too wet maybe in the interior south of Brazil over the coming week. That may set them back a little bit, but they have had some really good weather up to this point, and I don't think it's a long-term issue for them. In the meantime, Argentina is running a little dry in the west, and there's a lot of concern about that in Cordoba and parts of Santiago del Estero. Those two provinces probably won't see a lot of rain until maybe this time next week. They'll have an opportunity for some moisture. The rest of Argentina is in good shape, though. And one word of caution, don't try to make a second year of drought out of Argentina with that dryness that's out there. It will break down, and by the time soybean planting season begins in November, I think the there'll be moisture to work with.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online, listen to us on demand at willag.org, right there on the website, or as a podcast in iTunes, the Google Play Store, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and the NPR One app. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. Yesterday afternoon, we talked with Scott Irwin, agricultural economist, about the potential announcement the Trump administration was making on E15. It came out as expected. So let's recap some of that and then move into some other areas. Scott, first, will this make a difference in the balance sheet and demand for corn at all?
Not for this year, and I'm confident not for next year.
Why do you say that?
Well, first off, the EPA rulemaking process that the president is going to launch in and of itself means that the earliest possible date that you can get year-round E15 sales is starting next summer. And we know that there's legal uncertainties because the refining industry has loudly announced that they're going to litigate that decision. And so who knows? There's just a lot of uncertainties about when and whether the E15 year-round waiver will stick. And so I think reasonable expectation is at least for the next year or two, you won't see significant investment in E15 infrastructure until these uncertainties are cleared up.
Speaking of uncertainties, the Trump administration continues to hold the line on SREs, or the small refinery exemptions. You maintain that this hasn't had as big an impact on ethanol as most might believe, but that there is demand destruction. It's just for soy diesel or biodiesel rather than for corn-based ethanol.
Absolutely. I'm confident in my analysis that and basic economics predicts it, that despite all of the furor over the small refinery exemptions and corn ethanol, it's really good news that the usage of corn ethanol is holding up very strong. I can find very little, if any, evidence right now that the physical amounts of ethanol we're using have been affected by the small refinery exemptions. And that makes sense because ethanol is really cheap relative to gasoline and it has its octane benefits. So why wouldn't you blend it right now with $1.20 ethanol and $2.20 gasoline at the wholesale market? But biodiesel is a very different story. It's expensive relative to petroleum diesel, which means that you're not going to use biodiesel unless you're mandated to use it. And the total amount of biodiesel that is needed to fill the RFS mandates because of the small refinery exemptions has probably gone down at least 10%. So there's been real demand destruction from the small refinery exemptions, but it's in biodiesel, not ethanol.
Thanks, Scott. Scott Irwin is an agricultural economist from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You may find more from him on the Farm Doc Daily website. That's farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You can also hear more from him on our own website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. Don't forget to drop by there, and you can find all of our agricultural programming in most of its entirety to listen to on the site on demand anytime you'd like. Again, the address is willag.org. You can also find us in iTunes, the Google Play Store, on Stitcher, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and almost anywhere else you'll look for a podcast, including the NPR One app. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.